Chapter 30. The Fall of a Chieftain. There never was such an overturn in this world. Each of these six men was as though he had been struck. But with Silver the blow passed almost instantly. Every thought of his soul had been set full stretch like a racer on that money. Well, he was brought up in a single second, and he kept his head, found his temper, and changed his plan before the others had had time to realize the disappointment. "Jim," he whispered, "take that and stand by the treble." And he passed me a double-barreled pistol. At the same time, he began quietly moving northward, and in a few steps had put the hollow between us two and the other five. Then he looked at me and nodded, as much as to say, "Here is a narrow corner," as indeed I thought it was. His looks were now quite friendly, and I was so revolted at these constant changes that I could not forbear whispering, "So you've changed sides again?" There was no time left for him to answer. The buccaneers, with oaths and cries, began to leap one after another into the pit and to dig with their fingers, throwing the boards aside as they did so. Morgan found a piece of gold. He held it up with a perfect spout of oaths. It was a 2-guinea piece, and it went from hand to hand among them for a quarter of a minute. 2 guineas, roared Mary, shaking it at Silver. "That's your 700,000 pounds, is it?" "Dig away, boys," said Silver, with the coolest insolence. "You'll find some pig nuts, I shouldn't wonder." "Pig nuts," repeated Mary in a scream. "Mates, do you hear that? I tell you now, that man there knew it all along. Look in the face of him. You'll see it written there." "Ah, Mary," remarked Silver, "standing for captain again." But this time everyone was entirely in Mary's favor. They began to scramble out of the excavation, darting furious glances behind them. One thing I observed, which looked well for us, they all got out upon the opposite side from Silver. Well, there we stood, 2 on one side, 5 on the other, the pit between us, and nobody willing to strike the first blow. Silver never moved. He watched them, very upright on his crutch, and looked as cool as ever I saw him. He was brave, and no mistake. At last Mary seemed to think a speech might help matters. "Mates," says he, "there's 2 of them alone there. One's the old cripple that brought us all here and blundered us down to this. The other's that cub that I mean to have the heart of. Now, mates." He was raising his arm and his voice, and plainly meant to lead a charge. But just then, crack, 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 3 musket shots flashed out of the thicket. Mary tumbled head foremost into the excavation. The man with the bandage spun round and fell all his length upon his side, where he lay dead, and the other 3 turned and ran for it with all their might. Before you could wink, Long John had fired 2 barrels of a pistol into the struggling Mary, and as the man rolled up his eyes at him in the last agony, "George," said Silver, "I reckon I settled you." At the same moment, the doctor, Gray, and Ben Gunn joined us with smoking muskets from among the nutmeg trees. "Forward," cried the doctor, "double quick, my lads, we must head 'em off the boats." And we set off at a great pace, sometimes plunging through the bushes to the chest. I tell you, but Silver was anxious to keep up with us. The work that man went through, leaping on his crutch till the muscles of his chest were fit to burst, was work no sound man ever equaled, and so thinks the doctor. As it was, he was already 30 yards behind us, and on the verge of strangling, when we reached the brow of the slope. "Doctor," he hailed, "see there, no hurry." Sure enough, there was no hurry. In a more open part of the plateau, we could see the 3 survivors, still running in the same direction as they had started. We were already between them and the boats, and so we 4 sat down to breathe while Long John, mopping his face, came slowly up with us. "Thank you kindly, doctor," says he. "You came in about the nick of time, I guess, for me and Hawkins. And so it's you, Ben Gunn," he added. "Well, you're a nice one, to be sure." "I'm Ben Gunn, I am," replied the Maroon, wriggling like an eel in his embarrassment. And he added, after a long pause, "How do, Mr. Silver?" "Pretty well, I thank you," says you. "Ben, Ben," murmured Silver, "to think as you've done me." The doctor sent back Gray for one of the pickaxes, deserted in their flight by the mutineers, and then, as we proceeded leisurely downhill to where the boats were lying, related in a few words what had taken place. It was a story that profoundly interested Silver, and Ben Gunn, the half-idiot Maroon, was hero from beginning to end. Ben, in his long, lonely wanderings about the island, had found the skeleton. It was he that had rifled it. He had found the treasure. He had dug it up. It was the haft of his pickaxe that lay broken in the excavation. He had carried it on his back in many weary journeys, from the foot of a tall pine to a cave he had on the two-pointed hill at the northeast angle of the island. There it had lain stored in safety since 2 months before the arrival of the Hispaniola.